Wednesday, January 17th, 2018, you are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, coming to you from the Mile High City, Denver, Colorado. You know, we get together every weekday, and we talk sports, and we are happy to have you with us here today. Happy Wednesday to you. You know, we're grinding, we're getting through another week, and hopefully, we are giving you something to listen to. Maybe it's while you're at work. Maybe it's while you're driving to or from work. Maybe you're just working out. Maybe you're just at home listening to the podcast. Whatever it is, we hope that you are enjoying tuning into the Daily Dose every single day. Hey, if you would like to contact us, we would love to hear from you. Hit us up on email, dailydosesports@gmail.com, or go find us over on Facebook or Twitter. Both of those handles are at Daily Dose Sports. If you'd like to interact with us, maybe you've got a question, maybe you have a comment, maybe you have just some feedback for the show, we would love to hear your thoughts. Today on the show, you know, we do have a number of things to get to. We've got some breaking sports news that we want to talk about. I want to talk about a few of the top teams in college basketball. I know it's only January, but you know, February is going to start heating up. We're going to start getting deeper and deeper into conference play, and it's going to be March Madness before we know it. And you know, there is a top NBA team, and as soon as I say this, you're going to know who I'm talking about. There is a top NBA team that doesn't so much look like a top NBA team. At what point do they need to start getting more concerned than maybe they are right now? Plus, as we do each Wednesday, we will have our weekly Daily Dose Hump Day Power Rankings. What could we be ranking this week?
Hump Day!
You never know what we're going to rank on the Hump Day Rankings. You just never, ever know. Couple things coming out in the world of breaking news. It was announced on Tuesday, Heisman Trophy runner-up running back Bryce Love has decided to return to Stanford for his senior season. You know, his father confirmed that to ESPN on Tuesday morning. Love is just a junior. He's actually from North Carolina, and he was kind of trying to make his decision after their bowl game. Didn't come to a decision until very late on Monday. And the deadline for underclassmen to enter the draft was at midnight on Monday. So he said, okay, I'm not going to make the jump. I'm going to stick at Stanford for one more year. Now, the interesting part about this, and we're going to start hearing this, you may have already heard this. Why in the world would Bryce Love stay? Go make your millions. He's a fool to stay. What if he gets hurt? This is crazy that he would stay. Why would he not just go to the NFL? Hey, we saw him this year. He is one of the most electric players in college football this past year. Why in the world would he stay one more year? Now, the only problem that I have with that, because I understand all those things. We have seen guys stay and then get hurt. I totally understand that. I totally get that. But you know, I find it a little bit interesting that these other guys that say, hey, I'm going. There's never anyone questioning them. Everyone says, oh, he's going. I don't know. He wants to get the money. Why do we question these kids that want to stay? Maybe he doesn't need the money. Maybe he really enjoys the college experience. Maybe he wants to see if he can get Stanford to that next level. Whatever his reason is. Why do we question that? We never question the guys that go. How many guys go and we're sitting there going, man, you probably shouldn't even go. We don't question that. Hey, go make your money. Go get paid, son. But when they stay, we kind of look at them like they're crazy. Why would you stay? You're risking so much. Hey, maybe he genuinely likes playing college football. Maybe he wants to see if he can do a little bit more. Can't fault a kid for that. You know, we discussed it a little bit last week. It sounded like New England Patriots defensive coordinator Matt Patricia was going to be the new head coach for the New York Giants. Now it's starting to sound more like he could be going to the Detroit Lions. You know, Patricia would join Bob Quinn, who formerly worked for the Patriots and is now the Lions' general manager. So maybe that makes more sense. You know, there are also rumors floating around that maybe Patriots offensive coordinator Josh McDaniels could be going to Indianapolis. I told you that last week, that might be a possibility. Maybe he'll become the head coach of the Indianapolis Colts. Maybe he could kind of help resurrect Andrew Luck. I've also heard Josh McDaniels could be going to Tennessee. Maybe he's going to be pairing up with Marcus Mariota. See if he can get more out of that group than they had this year. Here's the thing. Until the New England Patriots are out, and that might not be until Super Bowl 52, until they're out, this is all just speculation, right? Like, no one can sign the contract. They have to wait. They can't go sign until their season ends. So I know we're all looking at, well, they're going to go to this team. Or sounds like he's going to go to this team. Or maybe he's going to go to this team. We don't know until they are out, and they might not be out until they are being crowned champs. Now, here is the one thing that is crossing my mind, though. It certainly looks like Bill Belichick will be losing both his offensive and defensive coordinators. At what point do the Patriots feel these losses? Like, at what point do they start to notice? Do we start to see it start to crumble? There's some cracks there. We've heard a number of these rumors about Brady and Belichick. They don't get along. And Robert Kraft is just, I don't know, half asleep half the time. He doesn't know what in the world's happening. And we're starting to hear about some cracks and crevices maybe in the picture. Hey, they don't show it on game day. I'll give them that. For all the things we're hearing, for all the disagreements that it sounds like there are behind the scenes, Brady might be crazy and he's going down this, I don't know, bizarre training slash Scientology stuff, whatever that is. For all the stuff we hear, we don't really see the cracks. Now, if offensive and defensive coordinators both start leaving and they start losing coaching staff, well, maybe we start to see some cracks there. Because at some point, the Patriots have to feel some of this, don't they? Now, my guess, and I don't know this, I'm just guessing. I'm certainly not involved in that organization. But I would guess that they would feel the loss of Matt Patricia more than they would Josh McDaniels. Because Tom Brady can pretty much run the offense himself, can't he? So I would think that they would feel Matt Patricia more than they would Josh McDaniels if he left. Tom Brady can do whatever he wants. It's like when Peyton Manning was in Denver. You can go hire an offensive coordinator if you want to. The real offensive coordinator is Peyton Manning, or it is Tom Brady. But at some point, you have to think this is going to affect the Patriots. Now remember, at the beginning of the season, remember when the Patriots played the Chiefs and we're looking at them and we're like, man, they're not very good defensively. They can't get a pass rush. They're kind of soft up front. Linebackers kind of have some injuries and secondary. Looks like they're disjointed. They don't know what they're playing. Matt Patricia somehow has pulled that unit together at least a little bit. I know they're not an elite defense, but he has definitely shored things up. Wouldn't losing Matt Patricia kind of feel like a pretty big loss? I know Bill Belichick's the man. I get that. But it seems like that would be kind of a substantial loss to lose both coordinators in the same year. We'll see where all this goes. Hey, we're not going to know until the Patriots get knocked out. Let's be real clear about that. Until they're gone, this is all speculation. What isn't speculation is it sounds like the Seattle Seahawks are going to hire Ken Norton Jr. to be their new defensive coordinator. Now, that doesn't sound like big news. Okay, so they hire Ken Norton Jr. Who cares? We've seen him coach other teams. We know he's a defensive coordinator. That's not a big deal. But here is the news. Remember, Ken Norton just took the very same job with the San Francisco 49ers. Like last week, like Monday or something, he just took that job. The 49ers hired Norton as their assistant head coach slash defensive and inside linebackers coach. But then this week, they said they would allow him to leave for an unspecified coordinator job somewhere else. Now, here's just the question I have, and I don't know anything. Again, haven't talked to anyone in Seattle. I have no idea. Just throwing this out there. Why would Ken Norton take a job in Seattle after just having taken a job with the 49ers? Maybe he feels like it's a better opportunity. Maybe he has, I don't know, some family or some people in Seattle. He really likes Seattle. He loves all the sunny cheer that's up in Seattle. I don't know. Maybe he likes the ownership better. Maybe he feels like there's a better opportunity there. Or maybe, just maybe, and I'm just throwing this out there. Maybe, just maybe, Ken Norton is looking at the situation in Seattle and he is saying, I just might have a chance to be a head coach soon. Pete Carroll is not the youngest guy in the world. I just might have a chance to turn this into a head coaching job of the Seattle Seahawks. Because other than that, I don't know if there's a real reason for him to jump laterally from San Francisco to Seattle. Seattle a better team? Maybe. San Francisco looks like a team on the rise, right? They look like they've got a good young quarterback in Jimmy Garoppolo. So it doesn't make a whole lot of sense unless he's looking at this as a career move. I might have a chance to go get myself a head coaching job. Hey, we've got a lot more to get to today on the Daily Dose. Who should be the number one team in college basketball? Right now, there's a bunch of teams out there that could be right there. And it's not going to be long before they start playing tournament games. Who should be the top team? And at what point should a certain NBA team start to panic? I think it might be a lot sooner than people might think. Plus, we do have our Daily Dose Hump Day Power Rankings. You know you have to stick around for that.
Someone on this train does not belong. Find them.
Why would I do it?
There would be a reward.
500 passengers.
If I identify them, someone on this train's gonna kill them.
One target.
You stop this goddamn train now.
It's time to finish what you started.
I'm done playing games.
Liam Neeson is The Commuter in cinemas Friday. Rated 15.
Okay, so who should be the number one team in college basketball right now? There are a few teams that honestly can be considered contenders. I'm telling you right now, February and going into March, it is going to be a fun time of year. College basketball is wide open. There's no runaway favorites here. I know that there are teams we look at and we say, well, if they're on their best day, can they be beaten? Yes, every single team we're going to name here on their best day, they could get beat still. Because there are talented teams all over. And each one of these teams has some pros and they have some cons. They have some positives and some negatives. And if you catch them on the right day, you might knock them off. By the same token, if they catch you on the right day, they might win the whole thing. I'm going to look at about 8 teams or so that I think at least are contenders to be the top college basketball team in the country right now. Like I said, they've got some pros, they've got some things in their favor, and they've got some cons that could end up costing them down the stretch. First team I want to look at, the Virginia Cavaliers. Pros for Virginia is the same thing we talk about every single year with Virginia and with Tony Bennett. That nasty, tenacious defense. Once again, the Virginia Cavaliers might be the best defensive team in the entire country. They're just so tough. If you watch them play defensively, they smother everything. Even your cuts. Like, it's one thing to smother the ball. It's one thing to smother off the ball. You make a pass and you cut through the lane, they're going to knock your head off. They are so physical and so tenacious with every single thing they do. They smother you. They look to force their will upon you. We don't get easy looks. We don't make easy passes. Everything is contested. Every shot, every pass, every dribble is contested. And because of that, Virginia is at least in it. So what are the cons for Virginia? Again, kind of the same as every year. Are they going to be able to generate enough points? Yes, they play nasty defense. But if you take care of the ball and you don't give them those transition points and easy baskets, can they generate enough offense? Their lone loss on the year, Virginia lost to West Virginia and they scored just 61 points. Can they score points when they absolutely have to? Especially in this era of college basketball, where the name of the game is scoring points. Like, you go out and you just look to score and score and score. There are a number of teams on our list today, and that's what they do. They score points. Can Virginia score enough points if they have to? We'll see. I think they're right in there. I don't know if they're the top team, though. Next team up, the Oklahoma Sooners. We've talked a little bit about the Sooners on the Daily Dose. Pros, obviously, their little guard, Trey Young, is probably the most exciting player in the country. I told you, he has just a little Steph Curry to him. Not so much talking about the deadliness of his shooting, not quite yet. He's very, very good, and he's shooting a much shorter shot. But his ability to get his shot off, his ability to see the floor, and his ball handling ability make him Steph Curry-ish. He's not Steph Curry, but he's kind of got a little bit of Steph Curry to his game. He is one of the most exciting players in the country. I can't wait for March Madness just so people get to discover him. I know hoop junkies know who he is, but I don't think the average sports fan, at least in this country, knows who he is. I don't think they do. They're going to learn very, very quickly. The Sooners can score some serious points. On the other side of Virginia, we just talked about, Oklahoma can score. Now, those are the pros. They've got Trae Young, and they can score. The cons for Oklahoma, they don't play much defense. And they might be too dependent on Trae Young. And at this level, teams can play you one of two ways. When you have a superstar like a Trae Young, and we're going to see it in the tournament, we're going to see it even in the Big 12 Conference Tournament, you can play Oklahoma two ways. You can sit there and say, hey, we're going to make someone else beat us. We're going to double Trae Young if we have to. We'll go to junk defenses. We'll go to box and one and triangle and two and whatever we have to do. We're going to make him work so hard to get anything, and we're going to force one of his teammates to step up and make plays we don't think they're capable of doing it. For one, they haven't had to do it much, so we don't think they can do it. Or they take the other approach, and I've seen this in coaching as well. You sit there and say, okay, so Trae Young scores, what, 30 a night? You know what? He can have 50 tonight. We don't think anyone else can do anything, So we're going to play everything straight up. We're going to make sure those other guys don't get much in their contributions. And we're going to say, hey, Trey, you got to score 75 tonight because we're going to score 76. And if you can score 75, well, I guess you beat us. You can have all the points you want. We'll just play it straight up. We're not going to let those other guys hurt us. Couple different ways that people are going to start playing Oklahoma. I think they might be too dependent on Trey Young. Really like his game. Really like the way he approaches the game. I just hope he stays healthy, and I want to see what he can do in the tournament. Oklahoma might be a little too dependent on him. We'll see. Next team up on our list. Got some pros and cons for the Michigan State Spartans. Hey, there's no question that Michigan State has a ton of depth. And it's kind of funny when you're watching Michigan State because you're sitting there going, they have more depth than every other team. Like in this era of kind of one and dones, how did they get so many great players on one team? They're going to continue getting better under Tom Izzo. The con for Michigan State is they don't always shoot the ball so well. And they are not playing Tom Izzo basketball just yet because they are way too careless with the basketball. I watched some of that game against Michigan on Saturday. They turned it over 18 times, and you could just see Tom Izzo's head getting ready to explode. Will you please take care of the ball? Because if you know Tom Izzo, they're going to rebound. They're going to play tenacious defense. We're going to take care of the ball, and they didn't do that. They've got to learn how to take care of that basketball way better if they're going to be one of the contenders. So I can't put Michigan State quite on top just yet. They're going to get better, though. I'll promise you that. Coming down the stretch, Michigan State will be right there. Another team that could be right there, little bit of a smaller conference, started to make a name for themselves in the last 4, 5, 6 years. Wichita State Shockers can score with anyone. And we know that they do have the confidence that they can get it done in March because they've done it in March. We've seen them knock off some of the Goliaths. We've seen them go very, very deep into the tournament. This Wichita State is a different cast, but they still have a ton of talent. Wichita State is going to be a team to deal with down the stretch. Here's the con for Wichita State. The schedule isn't that demanding. Like, the conference is okay, it's not great. So it's kind of hard to tell just how good Wichita State truly is. And come tournament time, we all know how much everything gets ratcheted up. The defense is tougher. The offenses are better. The quick hitters have to be perfect. Execution is so big when you haven't been being tested night in, night out. And Wichita State, like I said, schedule's not that tough. You never know how they're going to respond. The last group they had with Ron Baker and Fred Van Fleet and those guys, they knew, hey, come tournament time, we have to turn it up. We don't know how these guys are going to do that. We haven't seen that yet. So it's going to be interesting to see what Wichita State does. Talked a little bit on the Daily Dose already about Bobby Hurley's Arizona State Sun Devils, and this team is another team that can score some serious points. Arizona State averages nearly 90 points a game. But here is the con for Arizona State and why I can't put them on top just yet. They don't always play defense. And they really struggle to rebound. And that is a big concern too. Because if you're giving up rebounds, you're giving up more scoring opportunities to your opponent. Do you realize Arizona State has now lost 3 of their last 4? And what kind of games were there that they lost? Low scoring kind of dogfight games. They lost to Colorado. They lost to Arizona and they lost to Oregon. Now those are all okay teams. Colorado's not so great, but those are all decent teams. What we have to see is, does this Arizona State squad learn, hey, we've got to turn up our defense. We've got to execute better offensively, because if we get into one of those dogfights, we've lost a few of them. If we can learn from those and we can advance, then we can still be better. And come tournament time, okay, we've learned from our mistakes. We're going to be in the hunt. I think Arizona State has a chance to be in it. They've got to shore some things up. Speaking of a team that needs to shore some things up, the Duke Blue Devils, because they might be the most talented group in the country. They can score points in bunches when they are playing well. The con, of course, again for Duke, and we've seen this the last few years, and it's not an accident. It's a trend. It's these AAU kids coming out. Their defense isn't very good. They can't stop anyone. Here's what I want to see as we come down the stretch with Duke. Because like we've talked about, Duke might be the most talented team. Is Coach K going to have to play some zone to hide these guys? He might have to, because they're not good enough defensively, at least not yet. Now, I know in his practices, I know what he's doing. I know he's showing them defensive principles again and again and again. He's trying to get them to help and recover. He's trying to get them to show and recover. He's trying to get them to play some screen defense, both perimeter and even block to block and screen the screener stuff. I know that's what he's doing. I've even seen him do some of that stuff. I know that's what he's doing. But until they've done it again and again in games, those are just drills. Like, I'm not really going to do that stuff in a game. That's just a drill coach makes me do every day. They have to do it in a game. And right now, they're not capable. They'll get beat if they have to do that against a good team. Defensively, Duke Blue Devils, they are not quite ready for prime time. Offensively, as talented as anyone. Very, very good. Okay, so we're down to two more teams that at least right now, again, and this all could change, at least right now, these to me are the two top teams right now in college basketball. And they might kind of surprise you when I tell you who they are. The first team is the Purdue Boilermakers, because the Boilermakers keep racking up wins. They are now 17-2. And head coach Matt Painter, he is so good at generating points. So they're a very, very solid defensive team. And so you sit there and you kind of fall in, well, are they going to be the Virginia-type team where they can't score points? Not with Matt Painter. Matt Painter will find ways to generate points. This team is very, very good at both ends, and that is why I think Purdue is at least in the hunt for the best team in the country right now. Here is the con for Purdue. The schedule hasn't been very tough just yet. They only have one really, really good win. They beat Arizona, a talented team. I know they might not be top rated or whatever, not just yet, but a very talented team on a neutral court. That's a pretty good win. It's not a great win, but it's a pretty good win. Now, here's the thing for Purdue. Their schedule is about to ramp up big time. As they get into the depth of that Big Ten schedule, we're going to see Purdue get tested. They're going to have the Michigans, the Michigan States, even the Ohio States and teams like that. And so we're going to get a better idea about the Purdue Boilermakers over the next few weeks. But right now, they look like a very, very complete team at both sides. Just haven't quite seen enough of them and against top talent to really know, is Purdue really, really for real? Or are they kind of just beaten up on softer teams? We're going to find out in the next few weeks. So for right now, the best team in the country, at least for me, we'll see, is the Villanova Wildcats. Hey, pros for Villanova, they can do it all. They can run. They can get out in transition. They can play half-court offense. They can shoot. They can play tough defense. They have shown they can do it against pretty tough opponents at times. Now, the cons for Villanova, the schedule isn't overpowering. Like, you're not going to be blown away by Villanova's schedule. But they have blown out, not just beaten, but blown out both Gonzaga and Xavier. The one thing I want to see with Villanova, the thing that I'm really, really interested, can they win one of those tough, low-scoring games, and can they rebound when they have to? If they can, Villanova is going to be a contender to win the whole thing. I want to see them win that dogfight kind of a game. But right now, if I had to pick the top team in the country, yeah, I'm probably going with the Villanova Wildcats. Okay, so we've got to talk a little bit of NBA. At what point should the Cleveland Cavaliers begin to panic? Because they are one of the worst teams in the NBA defensively. Not in the East or not in the division or not. No, in the entire NBA, the Cleveland Cavaliers are one of the worst teams defensively. We saw them on Monday night against Golden State. And they're kind of hanging. Like, they're kind of playing. You're looking at them going, man, they're right there with Golden State. Like, the Warriors aren't blowing them away. It's a close game. They're right in it. Oh, and then Golden State had another level. They kind of shifted into fourth or fifth gear, and Cleveland's still chugging along in third. Like, hey, wait up, guys. Come on, wait up. They've now dropped to third in the East behind Boston and Toronto. And don't look now, but Miami, Washington, Indiana, Milwaukee, and Detroit are just like two or three games behind them. Here's the thing about Cleveland. They look horribly slow. And what's worse, they look horribly apathetic. They look like they don't even care. I'm watching Golden State transition against them. They don't even get back. Like, that's just the first rule. Just get back. They don't even do that. Yeah, I'll get there eventually. LeBron, get him. Can you get a stop? Throw it up to me. I want to shoot. That's all I see out of this team right now. So here is the question that I have. At what point is this truly a sign that the Cleveland Cavaliers are in trouble? And how much of this is just that yearly, well, it's January, and Cleveland looks terrible at this time of the year, just like they did last year, just like they did the year before? I mean, that has been a trend with this team, right? They don't always play all that hard in the dog days. Now, last year, they did the same thing, and then they kind of flipped the switch. They didn't flip it completely, but they kind of flipped the switch and started playing a little bit better down the stretch going into the playoffs. They got back up there to the number two spot. they ended up going to the NBA Finals. But here's the thing. As I'm watching this team, it doesn't look quite the same as that did. I'm not so sure that this team is quite as capable of flipping that switch. Because here is the question that I have. Where are they going to find any defensive momentum? We're sitting here and we're looking around and saying, well, yeah, but they're going to start scoring more points. Okay, I guess. Here's one thing. They're not going to score more than Golden State, I'll tell you that. But maybe in the East, that's enough. But I'm looking at that roster and I'm saying, where are they going to find any defensive momentum? Who is going to be the guy that steps up and gives them something, anything defensively? And I'm kind of struggling to find anyone. Like Isaiah Thomas, is he going to give them anything? No, he's not. Isaiah looks like he might be a little slower. Like he's a step slower, at least so far. And I know he's still coming off the hip injury, but it's going to be all Isaiah can do to get in and contribute, I think, offensively. So I don't think they're going to get anything from Isaiah in that regard. Are they going to get it from Kyle Korver? No. Are they going to get it from Kevin Love? God, no. Are they going to get it from Dwayne Wade? Not in like the last 7 years. No. So LeBron has to do everything again. That's what it looks like. And it's showing. Because you can see LeBron going, can someone step up? Can someone help? I mean, LeBron James is averaging 37 minutes a night. And yes, he's putting up amazing numbers, 27 points. He's getting like 8 rebounds and 9 assists per game. He's doing some great things. But again, you're going to have to carry an even bigger load once we get to the postseason. And I don't think that there's any way he can do that again. I don't know if he can get through the East though now. Forget beating the Warriors. Can the Cavaliers even win the East? No, not as they stand right now. I don't think they can. So at what point should the Cleveland Cavaliers really start to panic and look around and say, this might not be happening. We might be in some trouble. I'm actually going to give you a date. This is panic date. We're going to have to kind of track this here on the Daily Dose. I'm going to give you a panic date for Cleveland. They've got a little over a month. I'm going to give them until March 1st. March 1st. And here's why I'm going to give them that. Because the trade deadline is mid-February. Will they make a deal? Will Cleveland go out and say, okay, we're going to look to make a deal? They have a first-round draft pick. Do they look to go get someone? Do they look to go get maybe DeAndre Jordan from the Clippers? Do they look to go get maybe Marc Gasol from Memphis? How would those guys look in a Cleveland uniform? Would it change it that much? It might change a little bit. What if they just went to like Orlando and got someone like Jonathan Simmons who could play a little defense? We saw what he did with San Antonio last year. Young guy, talented guy, would play a little defense. They don't have that right now. And I realize that LeBron has assembled this team. Like we can say whatever we want. Hey, LeBron wanted Kevin Love. He wanted to get Kyrie out of there. Didn't like that. He wanted to bring Isaiah Thomas. He wanted to go get his buddy Dwayne Wade. This is all LeBron's doing. So I'm not going to sit here and say, hey, you know, they kind of screwed LeBron on this. No, LeBron put this all together. But they have a top pick to deal. Here's the thing, though. If they don't make a deal come mid-February, and then we got to kind of see how this person fits in if they do make a deal. If they don't deal that top pick, if they don't go make a run at someone in the trade deadline to shore up this awful defense, then we know already LeBron James is gone and the Cavs are done. They're not even going to chase it this year. Hey, we're going to give it a shot and see what we have this year. But if they're not willing to deal that pick, then we know, hey, LeBron's leaving. Because he doesn't care about getting a top pick. I got news for you. LeBron James could care less about drafting someone. He wants to win right now. If they don't go make a deal by the trade deadline and they don't start shoring things up by March, then we know LeBron's on his way out of Cleveland. Hey, coming back, we have to get to our Daily Dose Hump Day Power Rankings so we know who the best quarterback is remaining in these NFL playoffs, right? It's not even close. We've got Tom Brady and we've got everyone else. But it isn't always just about the quarterback in these postseason games, is it?
Someone on this train does not belong. Find them.
Why would I do it?
There would be a reward.
500 passengers.
If I identify them, someone on this train's gonna kill them.
One target.
You stop this goddamn train now.
It's time to finish what you started.
I'm done playing games.
Liam Neeson is The Commuter in cinemas Friday, rated 15.
Just a quick reminder, make sure that you do any of that post-holiday shopping, or maybe you need to find a Valentine's Day present. You can find one over at lootcrate.com/dailydose, where you can find all the latest pop culture collectibles featuring your favorite TV shows, movies, video games, you name it, they've got it. January's Loot Crate theme is called Discover. It features items from Rick and Morty, X-Files, Harry Potter, and Westworld. They have pretty much anything you can think of over at Loot Crate. You want hoodies, sweatshirts, t-shirts, stuff for your house, stuff for your desk, stuff for your car. They've got it all at Loot Crate. The best part about ordering from Loot Crate, when you check out, just type Daily Dose in the coupon box. We are going to get you 10% off of your order. Make it a little more affordable because we all know Valentine's Day, it's all kind of a big scam, right? We all know that. Hey, at least get 10% off of your Valentine's Day present. Okay, so as we do every single Wednesday, we've got to get to our Daily Dose Hump Day Power Rankings. And you know, we know that Tom Brady is head and shoulders above all of the other quarterbacks left in these playoffs. Right now, we have Tom Brady, Blake Bortles, Case Keenum, and Nick Foles. Not exactly a who's who after Tom Brady of great quarterbacks, is it? But here's the question that I'm going to ask you, and we are going to actually rank these teams today. Again, I'm not really ranking them. I'm just going to give you statistically where they rank. Who has the best defense of the remaining four teams? Because it might come down to that. What if you got some bad weather? What if you just got kind of a funky cold night and maybe someone turns it over? Who has the best defense left in these playoffs? Number four, of course, no big surprise, the New England Patriots. Right now, for the regular season, the Patriots have allowed 366 yards per game. They are allowing a little over 18 points per game. Now, when you first look at that, you say, oh, hey, they could be in some serious trouble. Well, maybe. But remember where this defense was. Like, they were giving up even more than that, and they were giving up almost 21 points a game, so they have pulled that in. They rank number four of the final four teams. Number three on the list of the best defenses remaining in the playoffs, the Philadelphia Eagles. Philly gives up just over 300 yards per game. They allow 18.4 points per game. That's just barely better than New England. That's how much better New England's defense has gotten. So Philly is right there at number three. Their defense is solid. It's right there. But they're not the best defense either. Moving on to number two. Who's the number two defense? The Jacksonville Jaguars. They're allowing just 286 yards per game. And they're allowing just 16.8 points per game. Now, some of that, we can look at the offenses they've played. Because Jacksonville hasn't played these great offenses. Now, I'm hearing some Jacksonville defensive players chirping about what they've done, chirping about how they're going to win the bowl. I heard Jalen Ramsey say, we're not just going to beat New England, we're going to win the whole thing. Slow down a little bit. Because you haven't done anything yet. You beat Pittsburgh. We knew Pittsburgh had issues, and I know that's a huge win for Jacksonville, especially for a team like that. But you beat a team with a lot of issues. Now let's see you do it against New England. That'll get my attention. If they can beat New England, no, then you got it. We'll see how Jacksonville looks against New England. I have a feeling Tom Brady's going to have a little something for them. And the number one defense in the playoffs remaining, it is the number one defense from the entire season. The Minnesota Vikings allow just 275 yards per game, 15.8 points per game. That is a team. They have surrounded Case Keenum with a very, very good defense, with some decent weapons on offense. The Minnesota Vikings could still be that team, just enough balance to win the entire thing. Now, here's the thing. Like I said, don't sleep on the New England Patriots defense, because here's the other side of it. They get to play some bad quarterbacks. The best quarterback they're going to play? What, Case Keenum? Nick Foles? Blake Bortles this week? That's who they get to play against. But if these defenses can come up with something, we know Tom Brady and the Patriots are the heavy favorite. Maybe these defenses could make it a little more interesting than you might think. Hey, tomorrow on the Daily Dose, we will, of course, be discussing the latest sports news and anything that is coming out in the world of sports. And as usual, on Thursday, we will have our Daily Dose overreactions of the week. And you know, we've had a bunch of those this week. Hey, have to say thank you so much for listening and sharing the show. Thank you for the emails, the texts, and the tweets. They are truly appreciated. If you would like to contact us, hit us up, dailydosesports@gmail.com, or find us over on Facebook or Twitter. We would love to hear from you. Have to say thank you to JSP. Could not do any of this without you. I will see you all tomorrow. Have a wonderful Wednesday.